but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Week one, one of the takeaways I had from week one was, has anybody noticed that these coaches are sniping at each other? Has anybody else noticed, like, you know, Dabo Swinney and Brian Kelly?
They're going to be a problem, and they got some explosive dudes, and it was a hell of a game. It was a hell of a game. Down the last play. Right out of the gate. It's like getting the final exam day one of class. They made a 65. We made a 58. Neither one of us were great.
65 to 58. Brian Kelly, LSU, didn't like that.
We dominated him in the second half. So he's either a really good grader giving himself a 58, or he's a really hard grader on us, or he didn't see the second half, which that might be the case. He might not have wanted to see the second half.
You got coaches fighting. You got Dan Lanning and Mike Gundy going at each other. John Wilner, San Jose Mercury News, here to talk about that plus other things. What do you think's going on with these coaches? They're sniping at each other.
Well, they are, and, you know, I don't know why Brian Kelly even had to respond. I mean, you know, that was not a whole lot of bait thrown out there by Dabo with his comment. Kelly should have just left that one alone. But I think a lot of it is they're under so much pressure to win. There's so much money-centric issues that are determining success that it's easy to fall back on the money, and that, you know, that's certainly what Gundy did. It's just, you know, it's beneath them on most of these occasions. It's way beneath the coaches, and yet they still go there, and they're getting paid all this money, and they should just be worried about coaching their players and winning games.
I think that recruiting plays a role in this and money plays a role in it. But I also think all these big matchups in week one put a lot of pressure on some of these traditionally successful coaches like Brian Kelly and Dabo Swinney. And we saw Kalen DeBoer in Alabama lose. We saw Texas get exploited by Ohio State. Arch Manning didn't look good. Who was the biggest disappointment in those top 10 matchups?
To me, it would have been Alabama. I mean, I like the early games, you know, whether it's week one or two or three. I love these kind of non-conference matchups. I thought Alabama certainly looked bad because they got beat up at the line of scrimmage, which you don't really expect from Alabama. They really, you know, they didn't have the energy you would have figured for a game like that, and they weren't as physical as you would have expected. So to me, that was the biggest disappointment. Texas, you know, all the hype on Arch Manning, he's still a rookie going in to play the defending champs. And that Clemson LSU game, I mean, that was a pretty close game. So Alabama to me really stood out. And I would say Boise State also, even though it wasn't a Saturday marquee game, Boise, boy, they looked bad. That was a surprise to me.
Is there a bounce back that you expect from one of these teams maybe that didn't have a great performance? Like, if you have to bet on a bounce back, what are you doing?
Good question. I don't know who they're playing. You know, a lot of times when you open with a big-time opponent, your next game is like an FCS. It's some kind of cupcake. So in terms of like a one-week bounce back, I don't really know how much is relevant if you're playing a cupcake, but in terms of the season,
Boise State has a Friday game, Eastern Washington.
Yeah, I mean, they should pound Eastern Washington, FCS. I think Florida State, they're playing like East Southern Northwest Texas or something. It's ridiculous. I don't know who Alabama has, but they have Wisconsin in 2 weeks. I'm guessing Alabama's got a cupcake. But for the season, you know, I think Texas will still end up having a good season. And Clemson, yeah, too. Alabama, I don't really know. And boy,
Alabama's,
I don't really know.
Alabama's got Louisiana Monroe on Saturday at home, and so they'll probably win that one. How much trouble is Kalen DeBoer in your mind?
I think you can easily see a scenario in which he's in a lot of trouble based on that performance. But part of their problem is that they've lost a bunch of games at the end of this last season and now to Florida State to unranked teams. And that is not something they're accustomed to in Tuscaloosa. I mean, they did lose a few games under Nick Saban, but they almost always won the games that you figured they should win. And that, I think, has been a shock to the system for their constituents. If they are 8-4, I think there's a real chance he's going to get fired. I think if he manages to save his job, they're going to need to make a change of defensive coordinator. They are not playing to the level of their talent on defense. That's for sure. 8-4, fired, 9-3, probably comes back. 10-2, he's safe.
John Wilner with us, San Jose Mercury News, also Canzano and Wilner, the podcast. Wilner, the Oregon
Don't forget
State
the podcast.
There you go. Oregon State, Washington State. I talked about this earlier in the show. You and I have talked about this on this week's podcast, that this is a really important game for the two holdover Pac-12 members. They're playing Pac-12 programs that will join in the future. How important is this one in your mind?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's important both immediately, like needing a win and needing to play well after playing poorly in their openers. But also, I think it has some long-term narrative implications. I mean, if they lose at home to these two teams coming up from the Mountain West to join the Pac-12, you know, I think that that's a reputational hit. I mean, obviously, they're not viewed the same way they were when they were in the Pac-12. Everybody gets that. But it's still, I think, seen as the Mountain West schools are going up to the Pac-12 and they're going to be, yep, competing against Oregon State and Washington. If they win these games, then, you know, it's like they have Oregon State and Washington have seeded the narrative ground in a lot of ways, the reputational ground.
I agree with you on that. I was concerned about the way that Oregon State looked in general. Trent Bray's team did not look prepared. He is an intense guy. They didn't look like they were having fun to me, Wilner. Am I making too much out of that I want them to look like they're having fun, and they don't look like they're having fun?
No, that's exactly right. He never looks like he's enjoying it. He always seems to be wound too tight to me. I thought his halftime interview on TV was over the top in terms of the frustration he showed. You got to present a calm demeanor to your players, and he does not do that. Now, I don't know what it's like in the locker room. I'm just going based on what I see on the field last year and on Saturday, and it's not what I see is not good, and it needs to change, or I think he's going to really have trouble long haul with his tenure there.
How much patience will an Oregon State and Washington State have with their coaches? Because I also heard from a lot of Washington State fans that who are frustrated with Jimmy Rogers.
I mean, they should be up frustrated. They need a last minute drive to beat Idaho. I think they rushed for 22 yards. Don't hold me to that, but I believe that was the number. The running game was anemic. You know, Rogers to me was a little bit of a risky hire from the get-go. I think that, you know, he's got more of a leash than Bray does just because he's in his first year. But the question for both is, you know, the money, the buyouts, the cost of changing the entire coaching staff. You know, it's an expensive proposition, and they are not exactly rolling in dough. So I think that gives both coaches maybe a little bit more leeway. But then again, you can argue that because the money's tight, there's more of an imperative to make a change and get somebody in who can fix it quickly. You know, it's a tough situation, and we don't know that either guy is going to need to get moved out. You know, but you can see where these are two tough jobs, and I'm not convinced either guy's up for it.
John Wilner with us, San Jose Mercury News. Utah got no love in the top 25. Why? Why didn't the voters love Utah?
You mean this, the ballot that came out, or the poll this week, or the preseason poll?
The poll that came out this week. I felt like Utah would have got maybe, you know, ranked a little higher, a little more love.
Yeah, are they? They're like in the 20 range, 22. I haven't looked, but
they're sitting at 25.
Woo! Well, on my ballot, they're like number 11 or 12.
Right. Okay. So
I was very impressed.
Are people not watching them, or what's happening?
I think part of it is people not watching them. That game started at 11 o'clock Eastern. So I actually think some of it is people did not see the game, you know, and a lot of the AP voters are east of the Mississippi. So that was clearly part of it. I think maybe it's a little bit of lingering skepticism from last year. And also, it shows you how little regard people have for UCLA, right? You go into the Rose Bowl and you blow UCLA's doors off. And it's like, you know, okay, people don't really respond to that. And that tells you how far the Bruins have fallen, for sure. But I thought it was very impressive. And I think Utah is going to be a huge problem in the for everybody else in the Big 12. They could very well end up in the playoff.
Was it more UCLA maybe not having it, or Utah being great in an opener?
I think it's both. Utah executed very well, three penalties, no turnovers. The quarterback, new quarterback from New Mexico, but very comfortable because his offensive coordinator, Jason Beck, came with him from New Mexico. So they know each other. You don't have necessarily the same first game glitches that you would with a new quarterback and a new system. They've also got probably the best offensive tackle tandem in the country, and their defense is always good. So I think that a lot of it was Utah in, you know, looking good, and some of it is UCLA not. And, you know, UCLA's coach, Deshaun Foster, to me, is a similar situation to Trent Bray in Corvallis, right? They're both alums of the schools. They're both in their second year. They both did not show a whole lot in their first year, and then they come out and lay eggs in their season openers. But pressure on both of those guys this year.
The AP poll in general, you have an approach that you take. What kind of direction are you getting? How do you sort of approach week two of a season? And you know, you move some teams around dramatically.
You do, and the AP encourages that. Every year they send voting guidelines to the folks with ballots, and it says on there, don't be afraid to make major changes, you know, to basically as a way of offsetting preseason bias. You think one thing with your preseason ballot, and then you see the results on the field that tell you something completely different, and you have to respond to what you see on the field. So that's a big thing, and that's what I try to do, for instance, with Utah. I mean, I didn't have Florida State. I think I had Florida State 25th in my preseason poll. I got them in the top 10. They look good. I had LSU, I don't know, 10th, 12th in my preseason poll. I got them number one. You got to respond to what you see. Week two is, you know, you're trying to just kind of add evidence. And part of the difficulty with the poll is that the schedules are so imbalanced. How do you grade Texas losing by a touchdown at the defending national champs versus Penn State beating Nevada by 35 or 40, right? I think, you know, I'll take a close loss to a good team over an easy win over a bad team in terms of what it tells me about the teams and where I should be putting them in my ballot.
I think you have Oregon sixth. Why Oregon at six for you?
Oregon at six is similar to where they were in my preseason poll. They might have been seventh. Basically, I've got the teams that won big games ahead of them. I've got Ohio State, LSU, Miami, and Florida State ahead of the Ducks because those teams all won big games against good teams. We think Alabama's good at least. And then I've got Penn State and then Oregon. So basically I took the teams that won the top 10 showdowns and put them in my top four. And then I got to the teams that I had like in my top 10 that played cupcakes. So that's the way I did it. And it'll change again this week.
Miami and Mario Cristobal. What did you make of Mario finally breaking through with a big win and Miami coming back? And, oh, by the way, I think he forgot. He lost count of how many timeouts Notre Dame had, but he still won the game.
Yeah, the most Mario thing ever, right? He's got the talent to win those games, and yet the attention to detail, the coaching mechanics always leave something to be desired, right? And that always ends up catching up with him at some point down the road, and I don't have any reason to think it'll be different this year. Now, if Carson Beck plays really well, they got a great chance to make the playoff and even win a game or two in the playoff. Mario always gets players, doesn't he? He got players at Oregon. He's got players at Miami. It's just, you know, you do wonder about the decision-making and, you know, putting all the chess pieces in the right places in the big games.
John Wilner with us. All right, week two, where do your eyes go? What are you most excited to see or curious to learn?
So a couple spots. Here's a two for one. I am very curious about the Pac-2 schools, Washington State, San Diego State, Oregon State, Fresno State. I'm going to be keeping an eye on both those games as we talked about big games for the Pac-2. Otherwise, I'm very curious about Michigan at Oklahoma, partly for the John Mateer factor, the Bryce Underwood factor for Michigan. Is Oklahoma a lot better than they were last year? If they lose this game, boy, there's going to be the same kind of smoke pouring from the ears of the fans that we're seeing in Tuscaloosa is going to happen in Norman. I'm also looking at ASU at Mississippi State. Think about this. ASU is like a touchdown favorite going on the road in the SEC. I mean, that's not something we would have expected a year ago or 2 years ago. Mississippi State, I think, is better this year. And I wonder how ASU is going to handle the whole environment, being the favorite, going in there with the cowbells, humidity. That one I've got an eye on for sure.
John Wilner, you're the best. I appreciate you. Look for the latest episode of Canzano and Wilner, the podcast, on YouTube.
Thanks, man.
There he goes. John Wilner. Steven, where are your eyes in week two? What are you excited to see? Because we had all these top 10 matchups in week one. Week two, a little bit of a under-the-radar week a little bit.
Yeah, the other game that I'm looking at, Michigan State, Boston College, I know it's not, you know, it's not as big a matchup as week one, but as a guy that's always kind of following Jonathan Smith, Aiden Childs, that's a big one for them. But I'm with Wilner on this one. Mississippi State, Arizona State in Starksville. Mississippi State won their first game at Southern Miss. For some reason, they went on the road and played at Southern Miss in their first game. Now they're off for a home opener year two of Jeff Lebby as their head coach. I actually think this is a sneaky spot where Arizona State's got to come ready to play or else they're going to lose this one.
Stick around. You got the Bald-Faced Truth statewide on the BFT Radio Network.